You're listening to The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, Tasmania's largest independent pop culture retailer. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au.
The Dice Men Cometh!
In a dark, dark week for Australia, the general public has been shocked to hear of cheating within our ranks. So, Mark...
Garth,
can you tell everyone about what you do when you play solo games to alter the results? Because I think Australia deserves to hear what you are doing in the confines of your own home.
Well, look, I never set out that with an intention to do it at the start. But, you know, sometimes you do spend an hour, an hour and a half.
Pretty large amount of pressure to win, isn't
there? Yeah, that's right. You don't want to waste that. So it's never my intention to cheat. In fact, I cannot stand cheating in board games. Because what's the point, really? I mean, you might as well just not play.
Exactly. And that's why I play app games, because I can't cheat. But anyway, welcome to The Dice Men Cometh. This is episode 206, believe it or Woo-hoo. Not, of the show that is all about dice games, board games, RPGs, which will become apparent when we talk about our special guest. So tonight we are not going to start with what we've been playing.
No.
Because although we have been playing a fair bit, we thought we'd mix things up a bit. It's episode 206, let's get it a little bit cray-cray.
And look, there's a little bit of celebrating.
Is that really?
Yeah, because Leon's not here.
Oh, hallelujah. We've replaced him with a much better version of what he wants to be.
We've got a special guest in the studio, a role-playing expert.
Yeah.
May I say. And we're going to grill him about his role-playing background, but also what he's been up to, what he's been playing lately, and how he gets the kids involved.
Correct.
We don't get too far ahead of ourselves. I have got a whole batch of Kickstarter goodness to talk about, because we haven't talked about that for a while.
No, we haven't. And look, we have got a couple of what we've been playing, because we have been playing quite a few things, but it's all time permitting, because we may talk about D&D and role-playing for God knows how much time.
And
Mark, you may have so much money because it's the end of the month and your commission check has rolled in that you want to spend it all on Kickstarter. So look, let's throw to a song. Then we'll come back, introduce our special guest, and we'll go from there.
And look, thanks so much to Area 52 for their amazing support. Yet again, get in there. Look, we're talking about role-playing. Leon just purchased,
Xanathar's
Book of Everything or something?
Yeah. So
just from Area 52 today.
Correct. So look, throw us to a song.
We'll be back shortly. That was Lower Plenty with Bondi's Dead here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with The Dice Men Cometh episode 206, and with our very special thanks, we're supported by Area 52, not only a place for board games, card games, books, cards. What else do they sell? Everything.
Everything.
But especially your role-playing ephemera, everything you need for all your various types of role-playing, because tonight we've got another role-playing special for you.
We sure do. So a couple of weeks ago, we talked about our most recent D&D campaign, which is our travels through Azeroth. But mainly it was focused on our use of the D&D Beyond app and briefly mentioning Roll20 and a couple of other systems and online sort of resources that we've used. Now, I want to take this back a little bit, because even though we live in Tasmania, and even though I have a 10-year-old son, he still goes to school.
Really?
Which is wonderful for this state. I think it's really, we should be proud of that.
Well, he's not out in the mines now?
No.
After school?
No, well, a little bit, but that's more of a home conversation. So part of this, yeah, this one day he comes back and he goes, you know what, Dad? You're a nerd and I still love you, but I'm going to give a bit of a D&D campaign a go.
Ooh.
Because there's this guy who looks after us at times, who's interested in doing D&D campaigns. And this is where I met our special guest, Will. Hello. Will.
Hello.
How are you going?
Very well, gentlemen. How are you? Thank you for having me.
Excellent. So, yes, we were introduced through D&D.
Yes.
Because you are brave enough, stupid enough, somewhere in between that spectrum, to run D&D with school-age kids.
Yeah.
And up to 10 of them at a time?
Up to 12 of them at a time.
12 of them at a time. So the Madless Devils continue. So welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I invited you on here because of, you know, a couple of conversations we've had about your use of D&D in an educational setting. Yep. But before we get to that, who the hell are you? Why are you here? And where did this love of roleplay and of D&D come for you growing up?
Oh, well, okay, first one first.
Yeah, go for it.
My name's Will. In relation to role-playing, it all started for me when I was 12.
Mm-hmm.
Someone told me about this weird comic describing a game. It was Darkest Dungeons.
Okay.
And I was like, what is this game that makes all of these horrible things happen to small children? So I was living in Sydney at the time, and there was a great shop called Atlantis Games. Big ups to Area 52, where I buy all my stuff as well.
Hey.
If I'm going to talk about another shop.
Definitely.
They're long gone. But I went in there, and some lovely older geeks took me under their wings and introduced me to, at that stage, advanced Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
There you go. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's pretty intense. Now, you've obviously continued the RPG love for a little while now.
Yep.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but you've studied childhood education as part of, you know, your university studies, is that right?
Not university, so I've got a diploma level qualification, which is usually used for children working up to about the age of 5.
Yeah, okay.
But about 5 years ago, as much as I love the small children in my work life, I know.
I wasn't going to go there.
As I said to you when we met up outside, I have had hay fever all day, and with some pseudo, sometimes my words do not come out exactly the way I want them, so I do apologise in advance.
That's all right, Mark. Whatever you've said, Mark has gone there and worse before.
Yeah,
no doubt
and
about that.
Look, clearly you're a high intelligence, high charisma, perhaps low wisdom type of character.
Depending on the day, I step dump wherever.
Yeah, yeah, maybe low constitution at the moment.
I started. I moved into school age care about 4 years ago, four mm-hmm. or 5 years ago, and then when I moved to Tasmania to continue on with my studies, I started working up at this school in the afternoons where I met the lovely Finn.
Yep,
and I just noticed how much I had a big group of boys between the age of 9 to 12,
mm.
and you could just see the geek just flowing off them. I mean, some of these kids, they were already writing, like designing a game system themselves. So I thought, well, I may as well teach you the oldest and the best.
Great.
And from there, I started to do a bit of reading about Dungeons and Dragons and role-playing in a long daycare, childcare or education settings. And so I sort of manipulated some of the rules and manipulated the fantastic starter set, the
yep.
Dungeons and Dragons, the minds of the word that I can never pronounce. and I've now got a group of anywhere between 8 to, as I said, 12.
Wow.
Where we're working through this campaign quite slowly
mm-hmm.
because I study and I've got a young family at home and as well as work. So I can't do a session as often as I would like. But, I've been really amazed at how the children have just really gotten into it. And despite all odds and belief, the fact that I actually have 3 female players under the age of 12 now, which I didn't have for a long time.
Yeah.
But it was sort of, I think I had a few of the girls just sort of standing at arm's length watching, thinking, this is fun, but I don't. Yeah. So we got them in and they're loving it.
That's fantastic, because it is a bit of a step to take. I mean, a lot of us, and obviously when Trent was on the show, and Mark, you would speak from experience as well, is that a lot of us got into role-playing games in high school primarily.
Yes.
You ran into that sort of crowd and it went from there and there. But it is a bit of a step to take because of the geekiness associated with it. Now, obviously, we're all comfortable. We're all friends here, which is lovely. And it's so great what you're doing with these school-age kids that, you know, my son comes back from sessions and just talks about it for the next couple of hours about, you know, the fact that he was a rogue because Finn's a sneaky bugger. So, it makes perfect thematic sense that he goes up there and tests the traps and sneaks around and stealths and stabs people in the back. It sounds like little me. It's wonderful.
It does.
But I'm really curious in the nature of being a DM, what extra preparation do you need to sort of do when you are planning for this session for school-age kids as opposed to, an adult campaign? Is there extra work you need to do? Or, from an educational point of view, is that where the mindset is at?
I think the ability to be able to do this with younger children, so under high school age, you need to understand children and how they work as a group,
mm-hmm.
especially for the large numbers I do, because I've regularly looked after sometimes 20, 25 children by myself. Not playing Dungeons and Dragons, that's just sort of batten down the hatches and pray. It's always a fun day when a staff member doesn't turn up.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But what I think preparation-wise, you just need to know your material. You need to know roughly how long your session's going to be, how much you're going to get through. Make sure that you've got as great as the starter campaign is, I have been wanting to throw, they get so bored of, everyone gets bored of fighting goblins.
Yes.
Yep.
I mean, it's...
It's always that first fight. That first fight's always going to be goblins. It's going to be entry level, basically the tutorial, kind of figuring out rolling dice and this is how the scoring and this is how the effects all work. So, completely get you there.
But the problem is that on all of the Dungeons & Dragons merchandise, there's no goblins. We've got beholders and hill giants and everything. So the first thing that they all wanted to fight was a beholder.
Yeah.
All of these level one characters. And what's this big orb with all these eyes? Oh, he looks cool. And I said, he hates you. He's completely full of himself, and he's not from this world. And if I was to give you what you want, this would be the quickest campaign.
That's one hell of a one-shot.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. One shot.
Yeah.
I think why it's become popular within the group of children and is you need... all DMs need to fudge the occasional role.
Of course.
You need to fudge more, but also in both directions.
Yeah.
So if I'm going to be constantly having to take my DM hat off and put my childcare hat on and calm the group down and things like that, it's breaking the flow.
Yeah.
So what I start to do is if they're starting to get a little bit rowdy or thinking that, getting a bit cheeky with me or a bit cheeky with each other, all of a sudden those sixes and sevens that I'm rolling behind the dice are becoming 18s and 19s. And if one kid is really, really, really testing me, then all of a sudden every roll that I make's a crit. But after the session, it's about saying, well, the reason why stuff started to happen to you was because you started to pull focus away from the rest of the group and what they were trying to do. So there's these two things that I'm doing at the one time. It's at one stage I'm running a game, and at the other stage I'm using those game rules
mm-hmm.
to affect their behaviour. And that's for the flow, and this also sort of leads to the conversation that we had originally is about using these sorts of systems to help them role model desired behaviours.
Yeah, that's what I heard straight away is, wow, you're actually teaching these kids how to behave in a group to have the group actually be effective in whatever it wants to do, whether it's killing goblins or whether it's like playing a football game or getting a job done, actually working together, making sure that you're looking at what other people are doing, how they're feeling, everyone gets a fair turn, all those sort of things, which is so important for life. Because, I mean, how many people do you know in a work environment that clearly didn't get that sort of exercise when they were younger? I think this is amazing. The question that I want to ask, though, is kids, they naturally think outside the box. Does this mean that your grey matter is constantly going, thinking of things that are outside the parameters provided by the starter set in this case to make up stuff? Do you have to have an encyclopedic knowledge of the setting to be able to just introduce all sorts of stuff or when they ask you that crazy left of centre question?
You know what? It's actually the reverse.
Oh.
Is because they think of this as such a it's huge to them. You know, even at 13, 14, you have a look at the three major rule books together. It's a lot of material.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of it is fluff, but, you know, it's a lot of rules. And so for a lot of the children, I think they feel like this is a huge undertaking, so they just concentrate on just their character.
Okay.
And just, we are very combat-focused.
Yeah.
The role-playing is now really starting to come out with a few harsh lessons from me. but ultimately, we're very combat-based, and then when we're not in combat, it's about trying to get the, as you said, to work together.
Yes.
But also to role-play together and actually put themselves outside of who they are and put themselves into their character.
Yeah.
So that's been the tricky bit, but it's also been the thing that's been very rewarding because I've seen a lot of children who I wouldn't say would be overly creative actually now starting to get behind their character a little bit more as they as writing their own characters has been fantastic for that. But yeah, the characters that we started off with from the set, they were, you know, they weren't going to read all of that
information. Yeah, very vanilla.
But now that they've got their characters and they've put them and we've got a couple of evil characters, which I was so against. Because all they want to do is just throw every spanner in the works that they can.
Yeah.
But, you know, you've got to, you can't let a drow be good.
No, you can't. I've played numerous drows and they are good fun to play if the setting and the camaraderie is correct, I guess. So the other thing that boggles my mind is when you've got 8, 10, 12 kids sitting around the table is keeping everyone engaged for, I guess, particularly combat rounds, which must be able to go for ages and ages and ages. What do you find as techniques to be able to make sure that you are keeping kids engaged in that above and beyond, you know, fudging the occasional roll here and there?
Making sure that I'm prepared.
Yep.
So before, if I know a round of combat's coming up, and they're sort of walking into it or they're a couple of minutes away, I'll do all of my initiative rolls because I know what I've got coming up, what monsters we've got. So I make sure that I've got all of that initiative done. So then if they're needing help during the rolls, because I still have some 9, 10-year-olds who, although their maths is good, addition with double numbers
you
know, can be a bit tricky for them. So I need to make sure that I'm there to help. And something that we've started doing recently is making sure that when I ask for initiative, they roll their dice, they don't start shouting their numbers up to me.
And we have that problem still, don't worry about that.
I've got 20, I've got 20.
Yeah.
Really?
Mm.
That doesn't look like a 20. That's definitely a 2. But, yeah, I think that's where my preparation comes in.
Sure.
Is being prepared for each encounter and making sure that, I've got everything there and that I can help them before the round of combat.
Fantastic. Because, yeah, you're playing that double role, aren't you? You're playing the GM that wants to kill everybody while you're also supporting the players and making sure that everyone has a fun time. Because ultimately that's the role of the DM, isn't it? To make sure that you're having fun?
Yeah.
Surely?
Now, Will, I wanted to ask, so you've obviously played D&D for quite some time. Have you played a lot of other role-playing games? Have you tried lots of systems?
Not really.
Okay.
I've been a D&D fan, obviously, since Advance.
Yes.
I played a bit of Pathfinder.
Okay. Yes.
And recently played a few games of Starfinder, which I really enjoyed.
Nice.
Most of my geek experience is more with tabletop war games.
Oh.
So War Machine and Hordes.
Yes.
And Malifaux. And then also CCGs, so Legends of the Five Rings before it became a collectible card game.
Yeah.
And, but I've done a bit of LARPing in the Legends of the Five Rings world.
Mm-hmm.
So I've never really gravitated towards one thing. I like bits and pieces from my geek.
That's good. Share the geek.
You've got plenty of geek cred there, that's for sure, amongst that lot.
Excellent. So, look, should we throw to a song?
Yeah, I was just thinking that because probably a few more questions you want to ask. Let's give you a break for a few minutes. We'll throw to a song. We'll come back and talk a little bit more. 29.3 FM with Iceman Cometh and special guest, role player and so much more geek cred or extraordinaire, Will. We're going to ask Will all about some of his other geek activities in a minute.
Correct, yeah. But I wanted to go back to the D&D side of things and basically sort of rehash what you touched on about modelling the right behaviour and sort of teaching kids. You know, we mentioned when we had this conversation about you popping on the show about how empathy was a big focus for you.
Yeah.
So can you sort of explain that, what you mean by, you know, trying to teach your kids a bit of empathy now and then?
Yeah, sure. Well, from a developmental side of it, we're usually seeing sort of the idea of egotistical children sort of fading out.
Between. I deal with that every week.
That's why we're celebrating Leon not being here. Hello, Leon, wherever you are.
So between about 5 to 7, you're sort of seeing that go pretty quickly, but I've always found with older children that it does linger for a while. And empathy, especially with, you know, only children that don't maybe have a sibling where they've got a lot of opportunities to be able to practice, because a lot of adults sort of forget that a lot of these things are behaviours and positive social interactions that we do are things that we learn. We only learn them through repetition. And that's one of the great things about teaching children using these sort of formal rule systems and role-playing is that you can get a child to practice a single behaviour 3 or 4 times in 10 minutes because you keep on throwing the same situation up at that child with a different flavoured sauce on it.
Yep.
So change a few characters or change, the ins and outs of what's happening, but ultimately the behaviour that you're wanting, you learn how to get that out.
Correct.
And as we all know as adults, is if we repeat behaviours, we're more likely to repeat them in the future.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter whether that's in a rule system or... And some of the children that, when I started out with the first group, they were my hardest kids. You know, I've never met a child that I haven't been able to get on side, but some of them take 2 to 3 months.
Wow. Yeah.
Because they're testing you. They want to know if you're going to follow through with what you say, both in positive and in consequences. And this is where you start seeing these... really amazing, not transformations, but you just start seeing these behaviours that you're modelling coming out outside of the role-playing setting. And when you start seeing that, you start sort of doing it more with the children and more, and you start seeing these more... And you don't want to obviously make this a purely educational exercise. I want them to have fun.
It needs to be fun.
But the great thing is that if you make it fun and they keep coming back for this, you've got this almost unlimited force to be able to... positively change these children's behaviours just through some, you know, really, really simple thought exercises is what it comes down to.
Yeah, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
So as a father to one of your rogues, thieves, whatever the hell he's playing this time, thank you very much.
Oh, my absolute pleasure.
Thank you very much for taking him off our hands for half a Sunday as well. That's brilliant. Because the thing is, these sessions are going for about 5 hours in a pop, you know?
Wow.
You drop them off at Area 52.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You give them their couple of bucks so that they can get takeaway pizza and have a bit of chocolate while they're there. And it's going through.
What's a game day without pizza and chocolate?
Yeah. Well, food. Exactly. Yeah. It's a very strict scenario about what games can be what games can be played and what food can be brought, because you don't want to get those pieces dirty.
Yes.
No.
Not so much an issue with role-playing games. So, yeah, my son Finney has an amazingly fun time and loves it. And it also allows me and him to talk about my role-playing, because I'm doing, you know, right now, we're doing the Azeroth campaign that we're meeting up every week and playing that. So it's great to be able to have that other form of communication with my son where we're talking about these pretend people that we're being, which is lovely. You must also find enjoyment being a role model to these kids, because I think in the Australian school system, you know, any male role model in an educational environment is great for young boys growing up. I think that's an amazing thing.
Yeah.
There are more of us, and I also think that it's, you know, it's good for both, for both genders, because, you know, everyone always goes straight for the boys. But there's also, you know, a lot of girls who grow up without fathers or without, you know, without a father around or without any other strong strong male role models, and we see just as much in educational literature about how it affects females just as much as males, just in different ways.
That's great. Yeah, because my brother-in-law, who's a teacher, he said the very same thing, that he just it's wonderful that two-way relationship that you form with the students. It's awesome.
Yeah, well, I've been a huge fan for many years of Steve Bidulph and his work, and obviously he's gained a lot of focus from his books about raising boys.
Yeah.
He's now on a world tour where he's got his new book, Raising Girls, and finding that, you know, girls and women are facing all sorts of different issues, but at, you know, at the same time that men and boys are focusing on their own issues. So everyone's got so much stuff happening. People are having children later. People are having less children. And as you said, there's far fewer opportunities for kids to interact with each other and their parents in those group settings to reinforce those behaviours. This sounds like a fantastic setting. I'm a father of two young men now. My youngest son is turning 17 on Tuesday. Can you believe that? But for me, board games was a great environment to teach them, again, those rules of you've got to let other people take turns, you've got to act within the rules, you've got to be polite, you know, but you can have a bit of fun across the table. Do you use board games, you know, because, hey, we're a board gaming podcast mostly, but do you use board games at all with kids, or is that something you keep just for your private life? Or tell us about your board game, your work.
I don't keep any of my geek to myself. If somebody's going to ask me to talk about, obviously I'm going to talk about my geek side.
Awesome.
I love board games, except for Monopoly, because the last time I had a game of Monopoly with my wife, we didn't speak for about 7 days afterwards.
You're in good company here.
Yeah, but that's just because I'm ultra competitive when it comes to Monopoly. Yes, we've... recently, this year, this first term, I've actually been teaching a couple of my children in the morning when I'm there before school how to play Netrunner.
Oh, wow.
Which has been a bit hit and miss because we haven't been able to get a lot of sessions in, and the sort of the hacking premise has been a bit hard to sort of underlay, but they're getting the rule system. But
that's great. That's setting them up for a lifetime wool of card games, though, that's for sure.
Definitely.
Well, yeah. It's good to hear that someone's doing something other than Pokemon with kids, because I think everyone thinks, oh, you want to play games with kids, it'll have to be Pokemon.
But it's also Yu-Gi-Oh.
It's also stopping kids going into drugs, because obviously with Netrunner, you buy all the things you can never afford drugs anymore. So that's good to know.
Yeah. At holiday programs, I've taken in my copy of Ticket to Ride and Small World.
Maybe we'll get Garth to come along one day for a game.
No. Ticket to Ride is staying forever in the unplayed pile for me. I reckon I've got to that point now where I can die happy if I never play it. Small World, it was one of my first sort of introductions into board gaming.
Yes,
same
here. When
I first moved down to Tasmania a decade or so ago. One of those games now that probably haven't played for 3 or 4 years at least, and there's still expansion after expansion after expansion.
Yeah.
But it looks great on the table, and it's quite a simple mechanic to teach to a lot of people, which is perfect.
Yeah, and also quite deep.
Yes,
at the end of it, it's one of those games that's just well worth the money, especially if you do have a family where you've got a couple of children at, you know, that sort of 9 and upwards age bracket. It's just super fun. My wife and I play it. Well, my 3-month-old daughter can't sort of get her head around it just yet.
But at least you beat her. At least,
definitely. Yeah, she's definitely player 3. The other game that I have that I wouldn't introduce to children would be Seven Wonders.
Yeah, okay.
A bit too full on. And wanted to play Advanced Dungeon Explore.
Okay.
I am a painter. A lot of my geekiness comes from war games, so excellent. Mainly War Machine and Hordes.
Yeah, okay. Well, we might have to give you some of the Rising Sun miniatures that Aiden hasn't done yet. I have played Seven Wonders Duel with Finn, though.
Yeah,
which is the two-player version of Seven Wonders. And after the initial learning, which only took 10, 15 minutes, we played maybe 3 or 4 games back-to-back.
Oh,
so
great.
There is certainly that Seven Wonders space for the younger kids. I think it was a really wonderful way to spend a couple of hours with him. It was fantastic.
Have you looked into any of the modern dungeon crawling type? I guess you've got the board games and then the sort of the board games with mini. So you've got Descent and those sort of things. And then you've got the ones that are more abstracted. What's the one I'm trying to think of where you're always backstabbing each other?
Cutthroat Caverns.
Cutthroat Caverns is a great card game where ostensibly it's a dungeon crawl, but you're really just just a party sort of sitting around and working out how to kill steal.
You're all working together.
Yeah.
As long as I take the fatal blow and collect the gold and screw you guys. So it's probably that little bit more dastardly, I reckon. You know, adding in a betrayer mechanic for kids can be a little bit of a learning curve, I reckon, because that in itself takes dynamics to a whole new level, I guess.
Yeah, after introducing a group of children to Munchkin for the first time and the amount of tears, I've never had so many children cry in one game.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That's all right. I'd cry if you made me play Munchkin as well.
But Munchkin's brutal. I've got two adult friends, and this happened to them while they were adults, who do not speak to each other anymore over one game of Munchkin.
Oh, board game's wonderful.
Oh, we love this hobby. Well, look, that's really all the questions I had. Yeah. Mark, have you got anything else?
No, look, I was going to say Sabotage, if you get a chance. Yeah. The card game Sabotage, where you're dwarf miners, but you sort of split into two teams where some dwarf miners are trying to get to the chest and other dwarf miners are trying to take you off the path, and you don't know who the goodies, who the bad guys, but it's a very simple card game. That might be a good introductory sort of where you're splitting the teams, but hey, you sound like you're doing an amazing job. If only I had teachers back in the day, although I guess D&D wasn't invented then, but let's not talk about it. It was more real life back then, wasn't it? That's right.
Yeah.
Now, did you mention before you had done some, I'm going to out you now, some LARPing?
Yes.
And is that something you've done here in Tasmania or something you did in Melbourne before you moved down?
This was actually something I did in Sydney before I moved to Melbourne.
Ah.
I was part of the University of Sydney's role-playing card games, miniatures, just everything geeky.
Yeah. Math club.
Math, pretty much. I'm horrible at math, though. And they did this LARP with, in the setting of Legend of the Five Rings, the CCG. And that was great fun because I've got a bit of an acting background and I sort of
look out.
Got thrown into this room where I said, well, you're now this samurai. And I was like, ooh, I know what I'm going to do at the end of this verse. I'm going to really insult somebody important and then just commit ritual suicide. And start a new character. And then I'm going to start that character's brother. And so then I can go for all of the intrigue of which clan made my brother commit suicide.
Yes.
So that was my LARPing experience. It was lots of fun.
Awesome.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Well, once the role-playing dries up, you can teach the kids that.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, that's the thing. You can go so far. And I wondered, just one last question, because when it's adults, sometimes it's all about, oh, what are the new feats and the new abilities I'm going to get when I level up? Do you sort of hold them back just to keep it nice and simple as far as, I don't even know whether you use XP or whether you talk about XP and levels?
So we level.
Okay.
We don't use feats at the moment.
Yeah.
Something that I've been doing is introducing them slowly we started off really basic.
Okay.
And so we just sort of introduce layers of rules to say, I think that they're appropriate.
Awesome.
Because, if you throw the full book at them, they're just, it's not going to be fun.
Oh, it's a heavy book too, most of them.
Yeah, and I don't need the paperwork. So.
Well, look, thanks so much for coming on, Will.
My absolute pleasure.
It's been wonderful to have you. Now, just a little story. After our chat a couple of weeks, months ago, whenever it was, when I collected my son from Area 52... was great. We introduced each other.
Yep.
I was in Area 52 about an hour and a half ago talking to Andrew, getting Xanathar's Guide to Everything or whatever it's called for Leon. But he also mentioned that the week after that session, they were open as normal, and two different families just happened to drop off kids that are about 10 years old, and the kids proceeded to ask, where's the D&D session for today? We're here for it. So clearly, the kids are loving it. Clearly, Area 52 loves having you around there. And as a parent, as I say, it's great that you take my child off my hands for at least half a Sunday. So thank you very much for coming on the show. It's wonderful to have you. And, that's really it. That's Will, our now RPG D&D childminder. Oh, fantastic.
I think we may have to get Will back sometime for another maybe an RPG Q&A session. So thanks so much. We'll be back shortly after this track to talk all about what's happening on Kickstarter.
Hey, April 25, 1915, a day that will live in infamy in Australia, New Zealand, and in Turkey, as the Battle of Gallipoli rages all throughout the peninsula. Mark?
Well, Garth, did you know the Hobart Mercury was the first Australian newspaper to report the Anzac landings?
No way!
We here at the Dice Men are the first to report this exciting new Kickstarter project, Battle Sim Gallipoli, where you can replay the famous landing on Gallipoli from either side,
ooh,
Turkish or Australia slash New Zealand slash all the other nations involved.
This is a live Kickstarter happening right now, where yes, you can play as either side. It is a hex-based movement game where you can alter the course of history, and maybe we can actually win at Gallipoli.
Garth, did you know this game was actually developed to teach high school children about this most important battle, but it's proved so popular amongst high school students that they recommended it should go out into the general community, and here it is.
Which is amazing. It also comes with the seal of approval from Australia's own Defence Forces.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, what a legacy that we have in our Defence Forces, starting with Gallipoli in 25 April 1915.
Followed up closely by the Battle of Kokoda or the Battle of Tobruk, to be coming later in later efforts of Battle Sim Games.
Exactly right, because this is the first of hopefully many. Now, Mark, it is already April, and it's almost Anzac Day, so you know what that means for me?
What does that mean, Garth?
It means Anzac biscuits.
Oh, yes. Did you know that Anzac biscuits were actually created by wives of soldiers who wanted to send healthy treats to their boys, but they didn't want to put any egg or milk in them because they would spoil?
Oh, that sounds terrible. Now, getting back to a Kickstarter, because it can't all be about food.
Yes.
If you are one of the first 50 backers on this, you'll pledge and get not one, but two versions of this wonderful board game.
Oh, my goodness.
There's only a few places left in that, maybe 10 or so, so you should get in quick before otherwise you'll have to just pay back and get one copy.
Well, we hope that this Kickstarter is more of a success than the Gallipoli campaign itself, but our nation was forged by such struggle and hardship, and I'm sure that Gecko Games will struggle on to get this Kickstarter over the line.
So if you're interested in the project, you want to give it some love, jump onto Kickstarter, search for Gallipoli. It's a long campaign, so there's about a month to go. Jump in, give them your money. We and Gecko Games would really appreciate it.
Cooey!
Well, there you go. That was Lucy. It continues to be Lucy. Wow, it's just not stopping. Lucy, what are you doing to me? Wow, that was Lucy with What You Want. They're a Tassie act.
Woohoo!
You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. Mark.
Garth.
Again, it's almost payday.
It is.
There's not much that I've backed lately, although I have backed one thing that you're not going to talk about because you don't think it's worthy.
Never mind. But the love kickstarts again right
it
now.
It sure Garth. Does.
Now, before we get into a couple of the new ones, quick shout out, Australia by Martin Wallace, which by the time people listen to this podcast
will
be finished, but it's got 19 hours to go here in pastime. They've raised over $230,000 Australian dollars.
Even more in New Zealand.
Four or five times their target. Amazing success story for Martin Wallace. And for Shill Mill, congratulations to them. The beautiful art by James Colmer. That's been a really great project. Really glad to see that went.
Not
really
to mention
well.
Their quote on the top of their Kickstarter page that highlights moves at an absolute clip. Dice Men Cometh.
Yes, that's right. And look, one more we talked about recently. Three weeks ago now, we talked about Castles of Kalera, another Australian project. Again, it's only got 3 days to go, so depending on when we get the podcast out, it may or may not be finished. It's so close. It's like 85, 90% there. I'm just not sure it's going to get over the line, but look, fingers crossed for them, absolutely. A couple of new Australian ones. So some of you may remember Judgment.
Yes.
Which we saw live at PAX last year. It was a 54mm, so twice the normal size, mini combat system. And because those figures are twice as big, so much detail. They looked amazing when we saw them at PAX.
Definitely.
By the two brothers, Andrew and Jeff Galea. So they've got Judgment Wave 2 on Kickstarter. They raised $50,000 in their first wave. They're now going for $75,000. They've only been going for 3 or 4 days. They've already over $50,000. So if you're into minis combat and, you know, you like your minis big, check these ones out. Judgment Wave 2, another great Aussie Kickstarter. Great to see these guys going from strength to strength. Squareware. Talking of RPGs.
Okay.
Squareware is dice tools for sparking the creative brain. And it's described as a powerful compact D6 dice set for determining every key creative stage of quests and encounters on the fly from a 9x9 boxed cockpit. So this is Chris McDermott. Now, he's run 11 successful Kickstarters.
Okay.
All around role-playing where it's been maps and campaigns and all sorts of stuff. Meanders, I don't know if you've ever come across Meanders. Anyway, he's had all these successful Kickstarter. I think he's run over 20 campaigns, of which 11 have been successful. So now he's got this basically lots and lots of dice in a box with lots and lots of charts and books and stuff to generate anything you need for a role-playing game. Now, I'm sure he's going to have lots of followers. It is quite an ambitious project because he's going for 60,000. It's only been going a day or so, and at the moment he's only got 1,000.
Okay.
But as I said, look, he must have generated a lot of followers from his previous campaigns, so we'll keep an eye on that one. Everyone get excited because it's almost Anzac Day in a month.
It is.
What better thing to do on Anzac Day than play Gallipoli, the board game?
Oh, really?
What are your legs?
2.
Steel Springs, Garth. Haven't you seen that movie?
Oh, God, I haven't seen that for 20 years. They're going to run like the wind, Bullseye.
Okay, we might have to have a refresher on that one. But, yeah, Gallipoli, the board game by Gecko Games, a new Australian company. It's a war game that lets you replay one of the most important military campaigns in modern Australia's young history. And quite interestingly, it was designed to teach high school students about the Gallipoli campaign, but they had so much success with it and people were really enamored by it that they're now on Kickstarter.
There you go.
And you might be hearing more about this on our show in the next few weeks. Look, it's only just started. It does need a bit of help because they're going for a very ambitious target of 40,000. They're sort of ticking along slowly, but if you're interested to check out Gallipoli the board game, I have been to Gallipoli. I was on watch as the dawn came up on the morning of the 75th anniversary of Gallipoli as a young naval officer. The day before, I'd done a tour of the Gallipoli Peninsula, and I tell you what, it is an eerie, amazing, freaky place. It sends chills up your spine. And we were finding casings and things like that in the dirt, wow, even then 75 years later.
And it must be mentioned that this game, Gallipoli, is Australian Defence Force approved.
Yes, that's right.
So it's not just a guy who's created a game. It's actually a guy who's created a game who's got the support of the Australian Defence Force, which is a pretty amazing achievement.
Yeah, and he's actually planning of this for this to be the first of a series where I think he's going to do Tobruk, the Battle of Tobruk, and also the Battle of Kokoda. So, look, love to see this guy be successful. Check that one out if you're interested in war games or Australian history. Now, I'm going to sneak a couple more in the Aussie section because these aren't Australian companies, but Jelly Bean Games with sometimes dice lady Tanya Walker. They've got a new game on Kickstarter called Village Pillage. Now, Garth, we played this one when we had a prototype day,
yeah,
with Tanya and Tom of Jelly Beans, who's the designer
of this game.
Of this game.
Yeah, we were very lucky enough to play it at our local watering hole a couple of months ago.
Mm.
And look, it's a very simple, fun, but with enough strategy in there, competitive village building game that's all about turnips. Really?
Yeah, that's right. And I really like the mechanic where you're basically almost sort of a little bit Seven Wonders style. You're fighting against your two neighbours.
Yes, and it's basically not a rock, paper, scissors off, but you're
like
playing
a simultaneous
cards
card flip
where each player to your immediate left or right, you simultaneously reveal cards, and there's basically a suit system where one trumps the other one, and then you get certain rewards or you get certain penalties or you get certain turnips. I really, really enjoyed this game.
Yeah, I was surprised.
However, my my love-hate affair with Jellybean is all around the shipping. And it's just one of those things that the game itself is really, really great. It's only about 24 US dollars. Yeah.
But then it's 10 US dollars for the shipping, which bumps it up to 34 US. So you're talking about 45 Australian dollars for a little box game. It's up there, getting there.
It's getting into that price range of Seven Wonders Duel and into some really well-established card games. It's not that entry-level cheap price point like Lady and the Tiger and what have you. So it's that next level up again. So, look, I hope it does well. How's it tracking anyway?
They're almost 20,000 of their goal of 26,000, and it's only a day and a bit.
So they're going to fund by the looks of it.
And, look, we saw the prototype version, which had some sort of, like, two-colour art from Tanya, most of the cards. These ones have got the... you wouldn't call them full colour because they're sort of a lot of different hues, but they're definitely the finished product. And this girl can draw, Garth. This woman can draw.
Oh, she's an amazingly talented illustrator and artist.
So the art in this is beautiful. So check that one out, Village Pillage. One more Australian one. So it doesn't show up when you search Australian Kickstarters on Kickstarter, but Wordforge is the name of the company. It's a UK company, but their game is designed by Chris Reynolds, who's from Canberra. It's called Armoured Digital. It's a miniatures war game. We talked about 54 mil figures. These are 15 mil, but that's because they're tanks.
Oh.
So that's a 1/100 scale skirmish war game.
15 mil. That's itty bitty.
Yep. With tanks, where you program drone tanks to outthink and outfight each other. Look, it's off to a great start. They're almost 100% funded over just over a day. It's only a short 20-day campaign. Now, it is 45 poons.
Okay.
And they do shipping added on at the end of the campaign. But I think you get a minimum of 8 little models, and they're very detailed. So if you're into miniature wargaming, little tanks, check out Armoured Digital.
And it's always important to actually support when it's funded, because then all the stretch goals open up.
Yeah.
And look, it was a very modest target. It was only about 5,000 Australian from
memory. Yeah, that's right. So, look, it's great to see another game designer getting his game in there. Now, let's spread our branches wider. Let's go to Canada, because we know we've got a few Canadian listeners. Firstly, Unbroken, which is a solo game, Garth,
of
survival
and
revenge. Survive against all odds, facing monsters and other perils in a dark fantasy tale. It's a quick, let's say 20 to 30 minute, tense and unforgiving solo game. It's only $29 Canadian, which is very close to $29 Australian, and about $10 shipping again. We talked about, you know, the value you can get for about $40. This one is huge. Got really nice, so it's lots and lots of cards fighting in a dungeon. The story is basically you've been in a dungeon in a party. Everyone else is wiped out. You've got to gather what resources you can, you know, sticks and stones and things to get yourself out of the dungeon and back home and survive. The great news is because it's over 600% funded, they've got lots of stretch goals, which means the little player mats they started out with are now slotted player sleets. Hey. You know I've got to love a slotted player
sheet.
So still 27 days to go. Check that one out, Unbroken.
And I think a new baddie or a new goodie is being unlocked at every $5,000 increment. There's just heaps of content that's going to be for that one.
Look, so I'm not a huge solo game fan, but this looks really fun. And because it plays quite quick, definitely worth a look. And another Canadian, this time a role-playing game. Now, here's something you've never heard of before. It's called Flying Circus. You're role-playing pilots in World War One era biplanes, surviving their high-stress career in a world of machines. But there's a little bit of magic there.
Okay.
So you basically have like your character sheet is like a cockpit.
Okay.
And you're rolling to move the bits of your plane to control your dogfighting and everything like that. That's
never heard of
quite
anything
like this.
Can you do some barnstorming at the end of the whole scenario?
I think you can. It's already over 500% funded. It's still got 8 days to go, so that's definitely worth checking out. Another one that I pointed out to you, Garth, just quickly, Dreamscape. This is absolutely beautiful looking game. It's abstract strategy, and it sort of feels like a cross between Santorini with a bit of Tashkalar, where you're doing these funny little movements to basically solve your dreams. in an abstract way.
Well, there you go.
It's absolutely beautiful. Dreamscape, it's €45, including a mini expansion. It's already 200% funded. It's not super friendly Australian shipping, but just look at it. It's beautiful. A couple more quick ones. Deca Slayer.
Oh, yes.
By Seiji Kanai and Hisashi Hayashi.
Who are two of the biggest names in Asian board game design,
absolutely.
It must be said.
Seiji Kanai did Love Letter.
What?
Hisashi, you know that game.
Yeah.
Hisashi Hayashi did Yokohama and a heap of other games. So it's a card game of heroes versus monsters with treasurer's rewards, super sweet Japanime-style art. Again, though, it's about $60, including shipping, for 122 cards.
I hovered over the pledge button.
Yeah.
I clicked the remind me button. But, yeah, it's just one of those things that the price is just that sort of 20%
too
high.
Couple more quick ones before we go. We haven't mentioned, and it's been out a while now, Architects of the West Kingdom. Follow-up from Garfield Games and Shem Phillips to their North Sea trilogy. This is the first of a new trilogy. Rado is raving about this another unique worker placement take. It's $78, including shipping, which is about 50 cents Australian, something like that.
Correct.
Look, it's super great value. It's over 1,000% funded.
And it's part of a new trilogy.
Exactly,
so
the West
more.
Kingdom trilogy. It does only have 6 days to go, so if you're listening to this podcast, get on it straight away. And one last one, Imperius by Colossal Games. They've done Western Legends, which went gangbusters. They went Kami Sami, which did quite well. Some beautiful looking games. And this is another one, Drafting Intrigue and Hidden Information, for 2 to 4 players that plays in between 20 and 45 minutes. The shipping is about $30 US. I don't know why, but it's a beautiful looking game. Check that out, Imperius. And Garth, more Elder Dice.
Oh, more Elder Dice.
You always need more Elder Dice.
I do. I really like my Elder Dice, except they don't roll 20s.
There's so much good stuff on Kickstarter at the moment. Batman, of course, just wrapping up. Leon's backed that. That's all we need to know.
Excellent. And on that note, we are out of here as well. We are wrapping up for the week. We've got to go and celebrate Easter by having some beers.
Woo-hoo.
So we have been the Dice Men Cometh. It has been episode 206. We are saying thank you to Area 52. And we're out of here. Is there anything else you want to say, Mark?
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to another episode of The Dice Men Cometh. Thanks to Area 52, Hobart's best ventilated game store, and more. Find out more on area52.com.au. They support the Dice Men, and you can too, at Patreon, for as little as just $1 per month. It's not a lot to ask for podcasting gold.